Great to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. The repercussions of precautionary electricity shutdowns in Northern California continue. As you undoubtedly know, PG&E, Pacific Gas, and Electric shut off power to what was close to a million people between Central and Northern California, that just a couple weeks ago, with historically high winds that had been forecast. But of course, the economic and just human cost of that has been very, very high. And there's a great deal of criticism of PG&E for over how they conducted those precautionary outages, not to mention the ongoing criticism that that privately run utility is not invested in making sure that its equipment was safe and wouldn't spark fires in the event of high winds. One of the proposals that's come out in the wake of this is for PG&E to move from private shareholder hands to that of either customer-owned or to municipally operated, like the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, or Pasadena, or Anaheim, which have their own municipal water and power companies. One of the proposals is coming from the mayor of San Jose, Sam Liccardo. Mayor Liccardo, thank you for joining us this morning.
Hi, Larry. Good to be with you.
So what is the difference, first of all, between a customer-owned utility and a municipally-owned utility?
Well, from the standpoint of where we are and where we need to get to be municipalized, a city like San Jose would have to come up with billions of dollars to go buy the wires and poles currently owned by PG&E and essentially the entire distribution network, and obviously would bear the liability as well that any utility would bear for any fires or other kinds of events that obviously PG&E is bearing the brunt of. A customer-owned utility or a cooperative is actually not a novel notion. There are about 900 utility cooperatives in the country today. Most of them are pretty small. A couple of them are pretty large. But essentially, the customers would own the company, much as we see, for example, with mutual insurance company like USAA or Mutual of Omaha or a credit union. So the board would essentially be replaced by folks who represent the customers. And it would fair to say that the financial incentives and interests of the company would be much more aligned with the customers.
Now, the liabilities that PG&E faces, or down here in Southern California, SoCal Edison faces, they have the ability, in liability cases, to apportion the cost pending state PUC authorization, partly to shareholders and partly to their ratepayers. If you have a customer-owned model, wouldn't that put all of the burden then on your customers? You don't have any shareholders to share that with.
Yeah, I'm not a legal expert, so I'd be speaking out of school, but as I see it right now, PG&E has roughly $55 billion in liabilities. And I'm not sure there's much shareholder value left anyway. And for all intents and purposes, the liability and burdens of PG&E are really ultimately borne by customers and the public, the taxpayers. And we're seeing that in various forms, including obviously the most recent agreement that was struck in Sacramento. We know that going forward, PG&E is a struggling company. It's been in bankruptcy twice. There's a high probability, I would expect, that if a fund comes in, a hedge fund comes in and purchases the assets and obviously benefits from whatever positive value might be left with PG&E's carcass, there's probably going to be a third bankruptcy. And once again, it's all going to come down to ratepayers and taxpayers. And I think we all need to be honest with ourselves.
We're talking with the mayor of San Jose, Sam Liccardo, who's proposing the co-op model, customer-owned utility or a municipal-owned utility. And he describes some of the differences there. Also with us is Michael Wara, who's director of the Climate and Energy Policy Program at the Woods Institute for the Environment at Stanford University. Thank you very much, Mr. Wara, for joining us. Your thoughts about either of these models versus the shareholder private model of SoCal Edison and PG&E?
Well, I think they have some pros in that, you know, customers and or local governments would have a greater degree of control over the company, and you would save money by not having to pay shareholders a profit on their investment. And maybe you could invest some of that money to, you know, increase safety, perhaps increase the innovativeness of the utility. On the other hand, I think it's important to remember that the utilities won't, the current owners of the utility won't give up without a fight. And the only way to make them give up without a fight is to pay them what they would consider to be a fair price for the assets. The history of trying to municipalize privately owned utilities in this country is one that is fraught with very extended litigation. The best example is the Sacramento Municipal Utility District, which took more than two decades to emerge after voters voted in favor of an initiative to municipalize PG&E's lines in that area.
In speaking of the Sacramento Municipal Utility District, we're joined by the former CEO of that entity, currently president of the Large Public Power Council, John DeStasio. Thank you, sir, for being with us. You want to respond to what Michael Warro was just saying about the challenges in Sacramento?
No, that's correct. I think in Sacramento, we had... The voters had voted to municipalize in, I think, 1923, and we didn't serve a single electron of electricity until 1947. So it can be a really protracted effort, especially when the private system is declared to not be for sale. Then that all needs to be done through significant regulatory and legal processes to ultimately get the people's will to be done.
Well, and I guess you're looking at other municipal-owned utilities. They're typically there from the beginning, right? Even as the cities incorporate. That's how they were able to do this in Los Angeles and elsewhere here in Southern California?
Yeah, there were opportunities very early on in the 30s for communities to make a determination about whether they would choose to municipalize or not, and many opted to. The Large Public Power Council, we have 27 large municipalities in 21 states, and those communities determined that the value of having direct accountability to consumers and transparency via public meetings, and also the alignment with regional or community priorities was of great importance to them. And I think that's the value proposition of public power.
Let me go back to Michael Warro and you know, talk about what ratepayers are paying here in California, because my understanding is that electricity rates per kilowatt hour are higher here than in other parts of the country. Why is that?
That's right. Electricity rates in California are among the highest in the country. Traditionally, the California Public Utility Commission and the Energy Commission have focused on investments in energy efficiency so that even though the rate was high, like the cost per kilowatt hour, California homes and businesses would be more efficient so that the total bill in any given month, which is what most people care about ultimately, would be lower. And so rates are high, but average electricity bills have historically been in the lower part of the lower 48 states. That's starting to change. Part of the change has to do with investments in gas infrastructure that have been required after San Bruno and modernization of our distribution system in the last few years. And then, of course, after 2017, there's been enormous investment due to the wildfires and attempts to reduce wildfire risk.
So that would be unique to California, but the repairing the infrastructure, updating that, that's across the country, right?
Well, to some degree, yes. To some degree, no. You know, it depends on what investments have been made over time, and to some degree, California has been investing in, you know, developing a kind of grid of the future. You know, we invested in smart meters for all of our customers. We've been investing in special systems in the distribution and transmission wires that allow better control, better management of distributed energy resources, things that are kind of consistent with the overall vision for 100% clean electricity in California. Some of that stuff costs money, and it's not always cheaper than the alternative, and so that's put some pressure on rates as well.
Okay.
Looking forward, you know, there's a big investment coming that has to do with wildfire, and
who's going to pay that? Yeah.
And that's going to happen no matter who owns the lines.
Sam Liccardo, mayor of San Jose, what would be the next step as you see it to investigate the potential for either a customer-owned co-op or city-owned, and you'd maybe join with other cities in joint ownership of a utility?
Yeah, I think, you know, we, at least in San Jose, prefer to push the customer-owned route. We're certainly recognizing the daunting challenges of municipalizing. And really, it's going to come down to both the federal bankruptcy judge and the CPUC. Under federal law, the PUC has to approve whatever comes out of bankruptcy, particularly if there's going to be a rate increase. And I guess just to build on Michael's last...
Real quickly, yeah.
The extraordinary amount of investment that's going to be required, not just to be resilient to wildfires, but to earthquakes and cyber attacks and all the other issues we're facing today, that's going to require access to capital.
All right. I need to break it off there. I'm so sorry. But Mayor Liccardo, thank you for joining us, Michael Rohr and John DeStasio as well. We appreciate your support so much for AirTalk on KPCC and the many ways that you provide it. You're part of the best and most generous audience in radio, and I certainly don't take you for granted. Thank you very, very much. We continue our conversation on municipal-owned or the alternative, a customer-owned co-op for utility companies. When does it make sense? When not? What's the difference in rates between one that's owned by shareholders as a private entity versus one that's owned either by its customers or by rate-paying public through city ownership of a utility, such as we have with Los Angeles Department of Water and Power or Anaheim Water and Power, any of these municipal-owned utilities that we have in Southern California. We're joined by the mayor of San Jose, Sam Liccardo, who's proposing the model of a co-op that would be owned by customers in lieu of PG&E, which services San Jose. They recently went through this experience where thousands of their customers were without power for an extended period as part of PG&E's precautionary cuts of power because of high winds. Also with us, Michael Wara of Stanford University's Woods Institute for the Environment. He directs the Climate and Energy Policy Program at Stanford. And John DeStasio, who is the president of the Large Public Power Council. He was the CEO of the Sacramento Municipal Utility District previously. Let me go back to you, Mayor Liccardo, and I'm sorry I had to so abruptly conclude that. So we're talking about the next step for this. If there's a protracted legal fight for the assets of PG&E, is this something that the city would really be up for?
Well, Larry, thanks. You know, we recognize there are really two venues where this will be fought out and perhaps a third. There's certainly the federal bankruptcy court, then there's the PUC, and it's quite possible the legislature may get involved. And I'm not going to predict how all that's going to sort out. What I'm hoping is that with enough cities and counties behind a cooperative model, that there might be some willingness, various stakeholders, to push in that direction. Obviously, we've got some hedge funds on the other side of that fight, but I have my confidence that the public could win.
All right. Let me go back to John DeStasio. John, what's your sense of how protracted a battle this might be?
Well, I think the mayor said it right. I mean, the experience that Sacramento had doesn't necessarily have to be the experience now, especially with the overhang of a bankruptcy proceeding. So there are different avenues now that probably change the dynamic of a city looking to either municipalize or stand up an electric co-op.
And Michael Wara, so how is the infrastructure repair going to be funded here? Because, you know, my understanding that the rate increases that were approved by the State Public Utilities Commission for PG&E, don't provide a fund to really do the kind of infrastructural repairs, you know, to avoid fires necessary to do that quickly. So what, you know, what's the answer over the next few years? Is it just shutting down the power preemptively for a decade?
Well, Mayor Liccardo made a really important point, which is that if, you know, if the utility were to be either to become a cooperative or a municipally owned utility, that would lower the risk from the perspective of the markets that would need to supply capital to make these investments. And so they could be done more inexpensively than at present. And that's a really important thing to keep in mind. We want to finance this with a 30-year mortgage, not a payday loan, ultimately, in terms of the interest rate that we're paying. And we're in big trouble with that right now. But I think the question around, you know, what do we need to do now to avoid blackouts? How do we manage that problem? That we are looking at a period of protracted power cuts just because we lack the skilled labor, and really the skilled labor isn't available anywhere in the country to do the kind of work that needs to be done to the PG&E system much more rapidly than that. And so what I would expect is that we're going to see these kinds of safety blackouts for the next several years, and that over time they will gradually the impacts on customers will get smaller over time. But it's going to be a long-term process. This is not something we're going to be able to get out of immediately, and whether the utility is municipal or collective or investor-owned isn't really going to make much difference on that.
In terms of the high-skilled labor to go out and do this repair work on lines, how are people trained in that? I assume these are union jobs and well paid, but how do the people that do that get the skills to do it?
Well, I'm not an expert on training for linemen, but I know that there's a progression of skill sets, and it takes an enormous amount of skill to be up on those lines, moving wires around, changing the layout of the circuits, which is the sorts of things that need to happen. It's also the case that we need to develop even really new skill sets, you know, to understand the right way to build a system to take account of wildfire in Northern California. That really hasn't been done before. There are other examples that we can look to. The example of San Diego, where San Diego Gas and Electric has spent about 12 years learning how to do this in their territory. But their territory is a lot smaller. It doesn't have as many trees. It's not as geographically diverse. And there are way fewer people that live in the high-risk areas than in Northern California.
Yeah, PG&E, one of the big problems, isn't it, that of just the territory it covers, I'm not talking customers, but the size of the company's footprint, it's got huge rural areas it has to deal with.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And, it serves an enormously diverse, both socioeconomically and geographically, territory. And so... managing the growing risk of fire, you know, that's being driven by a lot of factors. And I think we need to all bear that in mind, right? Part of the reason that these fires are so dangerous is that there are lots of people living in dangerous parts of the state. And when there are people in a place, that means we have to have electricity wires in that place and in some form or other. And so, you know, part of the challenge here is thinking about the other steps we can take that don't involve necessarily the electricity system to improve safety and safer ways to house Californians.
PG&E says a new round of power outages this week could put 500,000 Californians in the dark for days. The warning addressed residents in 15 counties, most in the Sierra foothills and the San Francisco Bay Area. That would, of course, include San Jose. It came less than 2 weeks after all the shutdowns shut off more than 1 million people throughout Central and Northern California, those for multiple days. Mayor Sam Liccardo of San Jose, how is your city preparing for potential precautionary shutoffs?
Well, we've invested a lot of time and energy in doing things like creating digital platforms that enable all of our emergency responders to understand exactly what's going on the ground in real time, using crowdsourcing app, so that way residents can tell us when their power is going out. We're often getting that information well in advance at PG&E, so then we can respond and really identifying in advance who those medically vulnerable residents are, so we can get them to a safe place where they can get access to electricity for their respirators or wheelchairs.
All right, gentlemen, I want to thank you all for being with us. That's the mayor of San Jose, Sam Liccardo, who's proposed a co-op customer-owned utility that would take the place of PG&E, which provides power to Northern and Central California. Michael Wara of Stanford University, where he directs the Climate and Energy Policy Program, and John DeStasio, president of the Large Public Power Council, and he had previously headed up the Sacramento Municipal Utility District. It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. These just the types of guests that we bring you every day, those right at the center of these sorts of public policy discussions that have a huge effect on you, whether you receive electricity, what you're paying for it, and the future of ownership of utilities.